Welcome to Good News, where good news gets the spotlight. I'm your host, Pastor Aaron Lane. I hope you're having an amazing day today, and if not, I hope that these stories will lift your mood and be able to set out on the rest of this day and this week with an awesome week ahead. I know I had a wonderful Father's Day yesterday. It was just a great time. Got to go to church and got to, you know, enjoy all the dad jokes. And my wife even got me one of those little bundt cakes, but it was a special one. It was a s'mores bundt cakes. And I will tell you, it was delicious. I hope that today this good news is like a s'mores bundt cake for your heart, for your mind, for your soul, and you're able to have just an amazing rest of the day and a great week ahead of you. So I know this week is Vacation Bible School at the church I serve, so if you are the praying type, I covet your prayers because I love it. There's preschoolers all the way up through sixth graders. There's lots of high school volunteers and adult volunteers. It is a wonderful week, but my friends, I will tell you, it is also exhausting. So please pray that we have a great time and everyone stays healthy and safe, and spirits are lifted through that ministry as well. And I appreciate ahead of time all your prayers for our Vacation Bible School. But that's not why we're here today. Today, we are going to talk about good news. Now, it's not breaking news, but it is mending news. Not the kind of news that, you know, pretends anything's wrong, that nothing is wrong, that the kind that looks away from smoke and fear and loneliness or injury or loss. The good news worth telling usually begins exactly there, in a place where something has gone wrong, and someone decides that wrong will not get the last word. And this week in good news, we have stories that take us to a highway in Texas, a remote trail in Minnesota, a closed research facility in Wisconsin, a pier in Florida, a forest road in Indonesia, a highway in Arizona, coral reefs around the world, office buildings in France, and a New York City street where one man's terrible night became the beginning of a very different kind of crowd. So I have in store for you today 9 stories, 9 signs of people and animals and communities and creation being met with courage and patience, imagination, and help. I'm Pastor Aaron Lane, and this is Good News on VoiceCore, where good news gets the spotlight. So let's begin with our first good news story in Laredo, Texas, where the sound no one expects to hear on an ordinary day came roaring down a near highway. A small business jet, a Cessna Citation Latitude, operated by NetJets, had taken off from San Jose del Cabo, Mexico, and was headed toward Austin when it diverted to Laredo because of some mechanical trouble. It crashed near the road, broke apart, and caught fire. There were 6 people on board. One passenger, Joshua Bear, died. That is part of the story, and it should not be softened. Good news does not ease all elements of grief. But what happened next is why this story belongs on this program. As flames rose from the wreckage, people did not run away from danger. Instead, they ran toward it. Motorists stopped. A tow truck driver named Ivan Franco was among them. He grabbed a sledgehammer and fire extinguishers. Others had a shovel. They broke through what they could break through. They fought back fire. They helped pull people from the wreckage. First responders arrived and joined the rescue. In the end, 5 of the 6 people on board survived. A truck driver who had been struck in the crash survived. Even a dog on board was rescued. Now, that sentence sounds almost too neat, doesn't it? Even the dog was rescued. But after the smoke and metal and panic, sometimes the smallest living detail becomes the one that tells you that people would not stop giving up. Officials praised the bystanders for their courage, and it was worth pausing there, because courage does not always arrive wearing a uniform, though we do give thanks to God that it often does. Sometimes, courage is a person on the road who sees a fire and says, "Somebody must be in there, and I need to be the somebody who helps." You're listening to Good News on Voice Corps. I'm your host, Pastor Aaron Lane. From a highway in Texas where strangers became rescuers, we now turn to a quieter place in Minnesota where two friends took a wrong turn, or maybe it was the right one. Adam Sandbeck and Mike Gravelin were out riding an ATV in Douglas County, Minnesota. The plan had shifted. The route had changed. You see, their fuel was getting low. And then, just something out of like a Law and Order episode, they saw a minivan on a remote trail. Interesting. That was enough to make Mike, a retired deputy U.S. Marshal, a little uneasy. He wondered whether something was wrong. He was right. Just not in the way he expected. Nearby, in mud that behaved like quicksand, was 68-year-old Catherine Walsener. She had been missing for 3 days. According to the local reporting and the sheriff's office, she had gotten stuck after leaving her vehicle and had been unable to free herself. She was sunburned, dehydrated, and trapped. The men heard her asking for help. Think about that. 3 days. Sun up, sun down, waiting, hoping, running out of strength, and then finally, the sound of someone close enough to hear. Adam and Mike called for help and stayed with her until emergency crews arrived. Catherine was taken to the hospital and later reunited with her family. There's a strange mercy in the accidental route. A wrong date, a low fuel tank, a shortcut, a van that seemed out of place. Most of us spend our days annoyed by interruptions. This story is a reminder that every now and then, the interruption actually is the assignment. And yes, I say that as someone who has absolutely been annoyed by interruptions. Hey, I'm a pastor, and trying to sit in my office and write a sermon, not the easiest thing to do. When I record this show, it's my day off, and nobody else is in the house, and I have to turn my computer and my phone on Do Not Disturb. Interruptions are basically a hidden liturgical season to me. But sometimes grace sounds like, why are we on this road? And the answer is, because someone there needs help. You're listening to Good News on Voice Corps, where good news gets the spotlight. I'm your host, Pastor Aaron Lane. So our first two stories today have been about people being found in time. Our next story is about dogs who would have been waiting much longer. You see, in Wisconsin, hundreds of beagles are beginning a new chapter. A breeding and research facility called Rigland Farms is closing, and according to the Associated Press, rescue groups are preparing to take in the remaining dogs. The number of reported dogs is 475 beagles. Now, I should be very careful in how I word this story, because Rigland Farms has been accused of mistreatment and said their dogs were healthy. The closure comes after a legal and regulatory pressure, including concerns about certain veterinary procedures they were doing. And as part of the resolution, the company agreed to give up its state breeding license. So the honest story about this is that, not that every question has been answered about what's gone on with these dogs, but the honest version is a facility that supplied beagles for research is closing, and hundreds of dogs are now moving toward rescue, care, and eventually adoption. And that's a meaningful turn, because somewhere in that number is a dog who has never known what it means to be someone's dog. A dog who's never had a favorite blanket. A dog who's never learned the sacred household law that if a human drops food on the floor, it is no longer human property. A dog who has never heard someone say, "Who's a good boy?" And then, for reasons no one can fully explain, say it 12 more times in the exact same voice. The rescue groups say the work is now patient work. These dogs will need medical care and time and help adjusting to life outside the facility. Freedom is wonderful, but it can also be unfamiliar. A door can open in a moment, but learning to trust the world, it can take a longer time. That is what makes this such a good news story worth telling. Not because everything's instantly easy, but because the next chapter is finally possible. And from beagles learning a new kind of life, let's go now to Florida, where another animal needed not only compassion, but a plan, a team, and one very practical piece of equipment. At Navarre Beach Fishing Pier, a sea turtle named Bowser had fishing hooks in his body and was entangled near the water below. Volunteers with the Navarre Beach Sea Turtle Conservation Center worked with the angler and used a specialized hoist to lift him about 35 feet from the water to the pier. The 172-pound sea turtle does not simply pop into your arms like a golden retriever puppy. This was careful work, heavy work, work that required training, equipment, and people who knew what to do. Within about 25 minutes, volunteers had Bowser on the pier. They cut the fishing line and loaded him for transport to the Gulfarium Care Center. There, staff removed external hooks. X-rays showed another hook in his esophagus, and the center said its team has established procedures for cases like this. Bowser was the 26th sea turtle rescue of the year for that local volunteer team. The center reported 59 rescues last year. The broader numbers are sobering. Good, 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 republishing reporting from Inside Climate News, noted that sea turtles face threats from fishing gear, habitat loss, boat strikes, and climate pressure. The hopeful part is not that those threats are gone, because obviously they're not. The hopeful part is that people have built systems of care strong enough to meet a turtle in trouble. A hoist, a transport plan, a rehab center, volunteers trained by the state, and a network ready when the call comes. That's what compassion looks like when it gets organized. It's one thing to love sea turtles in theory. It's another thing to lift 172 pounds of frightened reptile out of the water without making things worse. Bowser still needed medical care. His story was not finished at the pier. But because people were ready, he got a second chance. And sometimes, the distance between danger and a second chance is a rope, a hoist, and a team that refuses to look away. You're listening to Good News on Voice Corps, where good news gets the spotlight. I'm Pastor Aaron Lane. And now for a bit of celebrity good news, the kind that doesn't need scandal or shock or a courtroom sketch to make headlines. Anne Hathaway is expecting with her third child. The Oscar-winning actress shared the news on Instagram with a short, sweet video. She walks into frame wearing white, smiling, with her arms crossed in front of her. Then she lowers her arms and reveals her baby bump as Barbara Lewis sings, "Baby, I'm Yours." And that was the caption, too. "Baby, I'm Yours." That is pretty hard to beat for an announcement. Simple, warm, and a little vintage. Very Anne Hathaway. ABC News reported that a representative for Hathaway confirmed the pregnancy. The Associated Press also reported the news, noting that when asked for confirmation, a spokesman basically pointed back to the video and said the meaning was obvious. Fair enough. Hathaway is 43 years old, and she and her husband, Adam Suleiman, have been married since 2012 and are already parents of two sons, Jonathan and Jack. They have kept much of their family life private, which makes public moments feel intentional rather than overexposed. And maybe that's where the quieter grace lies in this story. In a world where celebrity news so often gets, you know, a contest over who can grab the first photo or the first leak or the first rumor, whatever, Hathaway got to tell this part of her own story in her own way. And that's just joy. A family growing and a mother smiling. A little life on the way. Not because everyone's story unfolds that way. It doesn't. Family, fertility, pregnancy, and parenthood can carry all kinds of tenderness and grief and longing and complexity. But for today, for Anne Hathaway, and for Adam Suleiman, the news is simple and sweet. Baby, I'm yours. Now, from one family's joyful announcement, we turn to another story about a second chance for something that comes wrapped in a tortilla and covered in red sauce. Friends, Taco Bell has brought back the Enchirito. Yes, the Enchirito. For some people, that sentence means nothing. For others, it's basically the fast food version of hearing that your favorite childhood band is getting back together. The Enchirito is one of those old school Taco Bell items with a devoted following. Think of McDonald's and the McRib, okay? It's part burrito, part enchilada, filled with seasoned beef, refried beans, and onions, then covered with red sauce and melted cheese. Can you already hear my arteries just hardening as I speak these words? The Enchirito is apparently followed by many, and many would say it's not a food designed for eating while driving, or wearing white, or making wise long-term nutritional choices. But it is nostalgic, and sometimes nostalgia comes with a spork. According to InspireMore.com, Taco Bell brought the Enchirito back on June 18th and is scheduled to stay on menus until July 22nd. AllRecipes.com also reported the return, noting that the item had been away from the national menu for about 3 years, and fans noticed immediately. Some celebrated, some begged Taco Bell to make it permanent. Others reacted the way people react to a long-lost menu item returning. It's with joy and urgency and a calendar reminder. Now, is this the most important news story in the world? Absolutely not. But good news does not always have to arrive with a rescue or major scientific breakthrough. Friends, sometimes good news is a little ordinary happiness that we can share with each other. Something that's tasty to remember. A lunch break that takes you back to 1998. A little silly, a little saucy, and it's a little reminder that not every headline has to raise your blood pressure, although if you eat enough of this, it probably will. And now from a small joy returning to a fast food menu, we now turn to a much larger celebration in Chicago. A celebration with presidents, with music, with children. With a former first lady making her husband cry in public, which honestly feels like one of those more reliable signs of a good speech. The Obama Presidential Center is now open to the public on Chicago's South Side. The invitation-only dedication ceremony was held Thursday, June 18th at John Lewis Plaza. The next day, June 19th, or Juneteenth, the campus open to visitors. That date carries weight. Juneteenth marks freedom delayed but not denied. And now, on that day, a new civic space has opened honoring the nation's first black president and first black first lady. But the joy of this opening was not only in the date, it was in the sound of the day. The Roots helped kick things off. Christina Aguilera performed What a Wonderful World. John Legend and Chicago's own Common sang Glory, their Academy Award-winning song from Selma. Eddie Vedder performed with young local musicians. Tems and Mark Antony brought energy to the crowd. Bono and The Edge performed City of Blinding Lights, a song closely connected to Obama's campaigns. Bruce Springsteen sang Land of Hope and Dreams. And Stevie Wonder helped bring the celebration home by singing Sign, Sealed, Delivered and his song Higher Ground. That's just not a ceremony, that's a playlist with a very strong security perimeter. The guest list was just remarkable. Former Presidents Bill Clinton, George W. Bush, and Joe Biden attended, along with former First Ladies Hillary Clinton, Laura Bush, and Jill Biden. The Obama family was there too, Barack and Michelle, with Malia and Sasha, a rare public appearance together. And yet, for all the celebrity and ceremony, some of the most moving moments were simple. Barack Obama took the stage and greeted the city by saying, "Hello, Chicago! Sweet home, Chicago!" He talked about arriving there in 1985 as a 23-year-old in what he called a janky car, knowing he wanted to make a difference, but not yet knowing what that would look like. He said it was in Chicago, day by day, block by block, that he found what he was looking for. Then he said the line that may be at the heart of the whole day. This center could not be any place else. That's what makes the meaningful the opening meaningful. The center is not in Washington. It's not tucked away from ordinary life. It's in Jackson Park on the south side of Chicago near communities that shaped the Obamas long before the White House did. Michelle Obama's speech brought the tenderness of the day into focus. She honored her husband's leadership, his steadiness, and his character. According to Reuters, she told him, quote, "With grace and class and cool, you made the hardest job in the world look like a walk in this beautiful park." And former President Obama appeared visibly moved. Michelle also reminded the crowd that the center is not simply about the Obamas. She said the project was grounded in their story, but it's never been about us. It's never been for us, she said. That is a good word for any legacy project. It is not only about the name on the building. That's too small. If it opens doors for other people, then maybe it's doing what it was built to do. The center itself includes a museum, a branch of the Chicago Public Library, gardens, play areas, athletic spaces, public art, and places for gathering and learning. It is not a traditional presidential library in the usual National Archives sense. The official presidential library is digital. The campus is more like a public invitation. Come learn. Come gather. Come remember. Come imagine what public life could still become. And the public opening on Juneteenth gave that invitation a human face. According to the Associated Press, Barack and Michelle Obama surprised the first 100 visitors who walked through the doors. They greeted people personally. Then they joined LeVar Burton when they read Where the Wild Things Are. You know LeVar Burton from Reading Rainbow. They read Where the Wild Things Are to a group of school children at the Chicago Public Library branch on the campus. That may be my favorite image of the whole opening. The former president, the former first lady, and LeVar Burton, which, again, we know from Reading Rainbow and Star Trek The Next Generation, and the general idea that books can make you a better human being. And a room full of children listening to a story. At one point, when the line in the book mentioned being king of all the wild things, Michelle Obama reportedly jumped in with, "Although there were no kings." And the room applauded. That is a pretty good Juneteenth library moment right there. The joy of that day was also put in the crowd. The Chicago Sun-Times reported on families at a watch party in Midway Pleiense Park. Excuse me if I mess that up. One local parent called it a moment of joy, and others talked about bringing their children because they wanted them to remember being part of history. Because the real hope of a place is not only that people will come and admire the past. It is that children will walk through those doors and think, maybe I belong in the story too. Maybe leadership is not just for famous people. Maybe citizenship is not only something that happens in election years. Maybe service can begin in a neighborhood, or in a classroom, in a library, in a church, in a synagogue, in a conversation, in a place where someone says, your voice matters. So friends, that's all the time we have for today, this week with good news. I hope that it lifted your spirits, gave you something to think about, and hopefully helps you go on your way the rest of the week with a smile on your face, and more importantly, a smile in your heart. My name is Pastor Aaron Lane. Thanks for being here today. I hope to be with you again next week. But until then, may your heart be light and your news be good. Stay tuned for more great programming right here on VoiceCore, your audio access to the world.